our next guest says the act of listening is much more than it seems. James Blatchley is a New York-based conductor and the director of the Experiential Orchestra and the Johnstown Symphony Orchestra. And he says listening can change our relationship with ourselves, each other, and the world.
But listening at that level can take some practice. So Blatchley's visiting Wisconsin this weekend to teach the skill at an event called Listening as Leadership at UW-Madison's Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery on Saturday at 3 p.m.
James, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
So as a conductor, you listen for a living. You do a lot of other things too, but listening is a big part of it. What does it mean to you to listen deeply?
Yeah, when people see a conductor on the stage, they often are reacting to their gestures and to their enthusiasm and excitement and sometimes their hair. You know, Gustavo Dudamel has this very famous hair.
Yeah.
He's an extraordinary conductor. The thing that's harder to articulate or to discern is how important hearing is and listening on the podium. And I find that the great conductors are able to hear not just everything that's going on in the room, but imagine and create a sound world internally that then is reflected by the performance. So it's a fairly ineffable art, but I think we all know it when we hear it. And when a conductor has this expansive inner sound world that becomes reflected in reality in the concert hall or wherever the performance is taking place, and magic happens.
Have you always been able to sort of build a world of sound based on what you feel inside, or has it taken some practice?
It's a constant, it's a constantly evolving process. To become a conductor, people often ask, how did you become a conductor? And I think it's a never-ending process of becoming. And so often the great conductors are those towards the end of their lives. This is when true mastery comes to bear. My pinnacle experience as a conductor and as a listener was attending the Lucerne Festival in 2007 and 2009, which is a festival that Claudio Abbado created towards the end of his life. He had already experienced a significant run-in with death, had overcome that, and was in some ways creating music from beyond, from the other side. And that's certainly how it felt to me in the audience. And I was able to listen to every one of the rehearsals, attend each rehearsal, each performance. And the sound world that was created with this orchestra of it's kind of laughable amount of talent on the stage. There were, in the first violin section, there were eight concertmasters from the major European orchestras all playing in the section. So it was this all-star team. And he molded and invited the sound in such an extraordinary way that when I returned to the States, I put on a concert of the exact same piece that he had been conducting, and with that sound still in my body and my ears, I put on my first public performance of Mahler 4. The nature of composing is that you hear music from somehow, somewhere, and then take notes. You take dictation from what you're hearing internally. And when I first met Riccardo Muti, for example, he described how the way to become a conductor is first to be a composer and then observe the great conductors as they work. That's a long answer to a short question, but it's appropriate because I think we become the conductors we want to be over a long period of time.
So to bring that forward into our day-to-day life, when did you realize that the kind of listening that you were doing and also building internally wasn't just something that was going to come into play on an orchestra stage in a great hall somewhere in the world, but in your day-to-day life?
Well, I started to make the connection actually while I was assistant conductor for the Boston Philharmonic. And my role there was many different aspects of many different things. But one of them was taking note internally during performances of all the things that needed to be changed for the next performance, because every player or many players would come to me after the performance and check in with me. How did this sound? Was it too loud today? Could this be better tomorrow? What did you hear? And so I had this long litany of detailed musical notes that I was taking internally in a very cerebral way, it must be said. And the person sitting next to me at one particular performance was listening in the opposite way. She somehow was able in her chair to relax backwards. And if you can imagine someone who loves the sun and hasn't seen it in 10 years, kind of reclining on a beach, absorbing the rays of the sun. This is how she was listening to the performance. And I decided to try that on for size. So I started to relax my body and open physically myself to the sound. And something really shifted internally. And also I heard more. This was also taking place. I was also conducting a lot at the time, and I started experimenting with this on the podium. So when I changed my physical, I would say tension more than anything, or internal awareness of how open I was physically, the sound changed dramatically. And it's something I think many people are aware of, is that the tension in their body is a reflection of the tension in their lives in some way. Often it's trauma is stored in the body in different places, and so we can have tension in the shoulder that is a reflection of perhaps an injury or perhaps something less concrete. But when we're able to open things physically, there are psychological and spiritual aspects that open as well. So I started doing that on the podium, and then a few months later, I was sitting in a garden with a good friend, but a very direct and powerful friend, and she turned to me and said, "James, what is your purpose in life?" And normally, if somebody asks you that question, you kind of deflect it. It's a hard thing to answer on the spot. But I had this flash of insight, and I realized that my purpose in life is to help people listen. And that my training as a conductor and as a composer would all come to bear on that. And I started sharing insights and observations, and also creating musical experiences for audiences based around this idea to expand people's ability to listen, not by telling them what to listen for or tell them what they were missing, but rather enabling them, empowering them, honoring what they already were doing, but might perhaps were not as aware of it as they might be. And one way I start this talk at times is to ask the audience to think of a time when they felt heard by someone else, to think of a time when you were going through something difficult in your life and you had a very close friend or a family member who was able to sit with you, and the feeling you have when you feel heard by that person. And it's a physical feeling, and often it doesn't have to do with what that person is saying. It's actually usually when there's no words being exchanged between people that we have this feeling. So we know that feeling well. We know where that sits in the body, and we know that that is can be a transformational experience to have someone sit with you and understand you fully. And so I invite people to use that as a starting point, and then we expand from there. We work on spatial listening, which is also something that we do quite naturally, and people have an incredibly sophisticated ability to listen. And then we work on listening contrapuntally. And ultimately, it all comes back to not only how we listen to each other in a leadership capacity or otherwise, in relationships. It's obviously a very helpful skill to develop for marriages. They say that this is one of the key ways that we can measure a successful or a happy marriage, is
I want to jump in and explain the word contrapuntally just quickly for people who don't know that musician's term. What is that?
Right. It's the ability to hear several different lines of music at the same time. Often it refers to a melody that's traded from one instrument or voice to another, in the fugue, for example. But if you can hear not only the melody but also the bass line and perhaps one or two inner voices, that's being able to listen contrapuntally. And when one can do that in your own life, for example, we all have an inner dialogue, and often it's an inner monologue, and quite often it's not the most friendly voice that we hear dominating the conversation internally. But what we can work on it through this talk and this activity, but also in general when we listen to music or in other ways in life, is to hear not only that dominant voice, but to hear other underlying voices inside of us, underlying presences of perhaps loved ones, beloved teachers, mentors, and supportive voices. So when you can do that, you're not as dominated by these very negative thoughts that we often have about ourselves. You're not doing enough, you're not doing it in the right way, this kind of thing. It's fascinating to hear someone play tennis, for example. You hear their inner voice come out when people talk to themselves, when they miss a shot. People are dominated by that voice very often, and I think that music can heal us in many ways and also transform the way that we listen to ourselves.
James Blatchley is a conductor based in New York. He's the music director of the Experiential Orchestra and the Johnstown Symphony Orchestra, and he's leading a workshop called Listening as Leadership at UW-Madison's Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery on Saturday at 3 p.m.
We go out with Mahler's Fourth Symphony. I can practice my listening skills right now. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time.